"You don't want to be out at a time like this, mister."
Vimes turned. He'd been hammering on the closed gates of the university. There were three watchmen behind him. One of them was holding a torch, another was holding a sword. A third had clearly decided that activities for tonight would not include heavy lifting. Vimes raised his hands slowly.
"I expect he wants to be in a nice cold cell for the night," said the one with the torch.
"Oh, dear," thought Vimes. "It's the Comedian of the Year contest. Coppers really oughtn't to try this, but they still did."
"I was just visiting the university," he said.
"Oh, yeah," said the one without either torch or sword. He was portly, and Vimes could make out the tarnished gleam of a sergeant's stripes.
"Where do you live?"
"Nowhere," said Vimes. "I've just arrived. And shall we move right along? I don't have a job and I don't have any money, and neither of those is a crime."
"Out after curfew. No visible means of support," said the sergeant.
"I got me legs," said Vimes.
"At the moment,"
said one of the men. He stopped when Vimes looked at him. "I want to make a complaint, sergeant."
"What about?"
"You," said Vimes.
"And the brother's grin here. You're not doing it right. If you're going to arrest someone, you take charge right away. You've got a badge and a weapon, yes? And he's got his hands up and a guilty conscience. Everyone's got a guilty conscience. So he's wondering what you know and what you're going to do. And what you do is fire off the question sharply. You don't make silly jokes, because that makes you all too human, and you keep him off balance so he can't quite think a clear sentence. And above all, you don't let him move like this and grab your arm and pull it up so it almost breaks like this, and grab your sword and hold it to your throat like this. Tell your men to lower those swords, will you? The way they're waving them around, they could hurt someone."
The sergeant gurgled.
"Right," said Vimes. "Oh, sergeant, this is a sword? Ever sharpen it? What do you use it for, bludgeoning people to death? Now, what you're going to do is, you're all going to put your weapons on the ground over there, and then I'm going to let the sarge go, and I'll leg it up that alley, okay? And by the time you've got your weapons, and believe me, I'd advise you to get all the weapons before coming after me, I'll be well away. End of problem all round. Any questions?"
All three watchmen were silent. Then Vimes heard a very faint, very close noise. It was the sound of the hairs in his ears rustling as, with great care, the tip of a crossbow bolt gently entered his ear.
"Yes, sir, I have a question," said the voice behind him. "Do you ever listen to your own advice?"
Vimes felt the pressure of the crossbow against his skull and wondered how far the arrow would go if the trigger was pulled. An inch would be too much. Sometimes you just had to take the lumps. He dropped the sword with great and exaggerated care, released his grip on the sergeant and stepped away meekly while the fourth watchman maintained his aim.
"I'll just stand with my legs apart, shall I?" he said.
"Yeah," growled the sergeant, turning around. "Yeah, that'll save us a bit of time. Although for you, mister, we've got all night. Well done, Lance Constable. We'll make a watchman of you yet."
"Yeah, well done," said Vimes, staring at the young man with the bow. But the sergeant was already taking his run-up.
It was later. Pain had happened. Vimes lay on the hard cell bed and tried to make it go away. It hadn't been as bad as it might be. That mob hadn't even been able to organise a good seeing to. They didn't understand how a man could roll with the punches, and half the time they were getting in their own way. Was he enjoying this? Not the pain. He'd pass on the pain. In fact, he's passed out on the pain. But there was that small part of him he'd heard sometimes during strenuous arrests after long chases, the part that wanted to punch and punch long after punching had already achieved its effect. There was a joy to it. He called it the beast. It stayed hidden until you needed it, and then, when you needed it, out it came. Pain brought it out, and fear. He'd killed werewolves with his bare hands, mad with anger and terror and tasting deep inside the blood of the beast, and it was sniffing the air.
"Hello, Mr. Vimes. I was wondering when you'd wake up."
He sat up sharply. The cells were barred on the corridor side, but also between cells as well, on the basis that those caged ought to know they were in a cage. And in the next cell, lying with his hands behind his head, was Carsa,
"Go on," said Carser cheerfully. "Make a grab for me through the bars, eh? Want to see how long it takes before the guards arrive?"
"At least they got you too," said Vimes.
"Not for long, not for long. I smell of roses, me. Visitor to the city. Got lost. Very helpful to the watch. So sorry to have bothered them. Here's a little something for their trouble."
"You shouldn't have stopped the watch taking bribes, Mr. Vimes. It means an easier life all round."
"Then I'll nail you some other way, Carser."
Carser inserted a finger in his nose, wiggled it round, withdrew it, inspected its contents critically, and flicked them up towards the ceiling.
"Well, that's where it goes all runny, Mr. Vimes. You see, I wasn't dragged in by four coppers. I didn't go around assaulting watchmen or trying to break into the university. I was knocking on the door."
"I believe you, Mr. Vimes.
But you know what coppers are like. You look at them in that funny way, and a bugger's will fit you up for every crime in the book. Terrible what they can pin on an honest man."
Vimes knew it.
"So, you got some money," he said. "Of course, Mr. Vimes, I'm a crook. And the best part is, it's even easier to be a crook when no one knows you're a crook. But coppering depends on people believing you're a copper. A turn up for the books, eh? You know, we're back in the good old days."
"It seems that way," Vimes admitted. He didn't like talking to Carser, but right now he seemed to be the only real person around.
"Where did you land, if I may ask?"
"In the shades."
"Me too. Couple of blokes tried to mug me where I lay. Me, I ask you, Mr. Vimes. Still, they had some money on them, so that worked out all right. Yes, I think I'm going to be very happy here. Oh, here comes one of our brave lads."
A watchman walked along the passage, swinging his keys. He was elderly, the kind of copper who gets given the jobs where swinging keys is more likely than swinging a truncheon, and his most distinguishing feature was a nose twice the width and half the length of the average nose. He stared at Vimes for a moment and then passed on to Carser's cell. He unlocked the door.
"You, hop it," he said.
"Yes, sir, thank you, sir," said Carser, hurrying out. He pointed to Vimes. "You want to watch that one, sir? He's an animal. Decent people shouldn't be locked up in the same cell, sir."
"Hop it," I said.
"Hopping it, sir, thank you, sir."
And Carser, with a leery wink at Vimes, hopped it. The jailer turned to Vimes.
"And what's your name, mister?"
"John Keel," said Vimes.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah, and I've had my kick in. Fair's fair. I'd like to go now."
"Oh, you'd like to go, would you? You'd like me to hand over these keys and give you 5 pence in the poor box for your trouble, eh?"
The man was standing very close to the bars, with the grin of one who mistakenly thinks he's a wit when he's only half a one. And if Vimes's reflexes were quicker, and he'd bet they were even now, it'd be the work of a second to pull the old fool forcibly into the bars and spread his nose even further across his face. No doubt about it, the psychopaths had it the easy way.
"Just freedom would do," he said, resisting temptation. "You ain't going anywhere, except to see the captain," said the jailer.
"That'd be Captain Tilden," said Vimes. "Have I got that right? Smokes like a bonfire, got a brass ear and a wooden leg."
"Yeah, and he can have you shot. How do you like them bananas?"
The cluttered desk of Vimes's memory finally unearthed the inadvertent coffee mat of recollection from under the teacup of forgetfulness.
"You're snouty," he said. "Right? Some bloke broke your nose and it never got set properly, and your eyes water all the time, which is why they gave you permanent jail duty." "Do I know you, mister?" said Snouty, peering at Vimes through suspicious running eyes.
"Me? No, said Vimes hastily. "But I've heard people talk about you. Practically runs the watch house, they said. Very fair man, they said. Firm but fair. Never spits in the gruel, never whittles in the tea, and never confuses his fruit either."
The visible parts of Snouty's face contorted into the resentful scowl of someone who can't quite keep up with the script.
"Oh, yeah," he managed. "Well, I've always kept a clean cell, that's very true."
He looked a little nonplussed at the development, but managed another scowl.
"You stay here, mister, and I'll go and tell the captain you woke up."
Vimes went back and lay on the bunk, staring at the badly spelled and anatomically incorrect graffiti on the ceiling. For a while there was a raised voice from upstairs with an occasional intrusive from Snouty. Then he heard the jailer's footsteps on the stairs again.
"Well, well, well," he said, with the tone of someone looking forward to seeing a third party get what was coming to them. "Turns out the captain wants to see you right away. Now, are you going to let me shackle you? Or do I call the lads down?
God's protect you, Vimes thought. Maybe it was true that the blow that had spread Snouty's nose across his face had scrambled his brain. You had to be a special kind of idiot to try to handcuff a dangerous prisoner all by yourself. If he'd tried it with Carser, for example, he'd have been a dead idiot 5 minutes ago. The jailer opened the door. Vimes stood up and presented his wrists. After a second's hesitation, Snouty handcuffed him. It always paid to be nice to the jailer. You might not get handcuffed behind your back. But a man with both hands in front of him had quite a lot of freedom.
"You go up the stairs first," said Snouty,
and reached down and picked up a rather more efficient-looking crossbow than Vimes had seen last night.
"And if you even try to walk fast, mister, I'll shoot you where you die slow."
"Very fair," said Vimes, "very fair." He walked up the stairs very carefully, hearing Snouty's heavy breathing right behind him. Like many people of limited intellectual scope, Snouty did take what he could do very seriously. He'd show a refreshing lack of compunction about pulling that trigger, for one thing. Vimes reached the top of the stairs and remembered to hesitate.
"And turn left, you," said Snouty behind him.
Vimes nodded to himself, and then first on the right it was all coming back to him in a great wave. This was Treacle Mine Road. This was his first watch house. This was where it all began. The captain's door was open. The tired-looking old man behind the desk glanced up.
"Be seated," said Tilden coldly. "Thank you, Snouty."
Vimes had mixed memories of Captain Tilden. He had been a military man before being given this job as a kind of pension, and that was a bad thing in a senior copper. It meant he looked to authority for orders and obeyed them, whereas Vimes found it better to look to authority for orders and then filter those orders through a fine mesh of common sense, adding a generous scoop of creative misunderstanding and maybe even incipient deafness if circumstances demanded, because authority rarely descended to street level. Tilden set too great a score by shiny breastplates and smartness on parade. You had to have some of that stuff. That was true enough. You couldn't let people slob around. But although he'd never voiced the view in public, Vimes liked to see a bit of battered armour around the place. It showed that someone had been battering it. Besides, when you were lurking in the shadows, you didn't want to gleam. There was an Ankh-Morpork flag pinned to one wall. The red faded to threadbare orange. Rumour had it that Tilden saluted it every day. There was also a very large silver inkstand with a gilt regimental crest on it, occupying quite a lot of the desk. Snouty polished it every morning and it shone. Tilden had never quite left the army behind. Still, Vimes retained a soft spot for the old man. He'd been a successful soldier as these things went. He'd generally been on the winning side and had killed more of the enemy by good if dull tactics than his own men by bad but exciting ones. He'd been, in his own way, kind and reasonably fair. The men of the watch had run rings around him without him even noticing. Now Tilden was giving him the long stare with associated paperwork. It was supposed to mean, "We know all about you, so why don't you tell us all about yourself?" But he really wasn't any good at it. Vimes returned it blankly.
"What is your name again?" said Tilden, aware that Vimes was the better starer.
"Keel," said Vimes. "John Keel."
"And what the hell?" "Look," he said, "you've only got one piece of paper there that means anything, and that's the report from that sergeant, assuming he can write."
"As a matter of fact, I have two pieces of paper," said the captain. "The other one concerns the death of John Keel."
"What?"
"What? For a scrap of the watch?" "In the current emergency, that would be quite sufficient for the death penalty," said Tilden, leaning forward. "But, ha! Perhaps it won't be necessary in this case, because John Keel died yesterday. You beat him up and robbed him, what? You took his money, but you didn't bother with the letters, because your sort can't read, what? So you wouldn't have known that John Keel was a policeman, what?"
"What?"
Vimes stared at the skinny face with its triumphantly bristling moustache and the little faded blue eyes. And then there was the sound of someone industriously sweeping the floor in the corridor outside. The captain looked past him, growled, and hurled a pen.
"Get him out of here," he barked. "What's the little devil doing here this time of night, anyway?"
Vimes turned his head. There was a skinny, wizened-looking man standing in the doorway, bearded and as bald as a baby. He was grinning stupidly and holding a broom.
"He's cheap, sir, and it's best if he comes in when it's quiet,"
Snouty murmured, grabbing the little man by a stick-thin elbow.
"Come on, out you get, Mr. Lousy."
So now the crossbow wasn't pointing at Vimes, and he had several pounds of metal on his wrists, or, to put it another way, his arms were a hammer. He went to stand up. Vimes woke up and stared at the ceiling. There was a deep rumbling somewhere nearby. Treadmill? Watermill? It was going to be a corny line, but some things you had to know. "Where am I?" he said, and then he added, "This time."
"Well done," said a voice somewhere behind him. "Consciousness to sarcasm in 5 seconds."
The room was large by the feel of the air, and the play of light on the walls suggested there were candles alight behind Vimes. The voice said,
"I'd like you to think of me as a friend."
"A friend? Why?" said Vimes. There was a smell of cigarette smoke in the air.
"Everyone ought to have a friend," said the voice. "Ah, I see you've noticed you're still handcuffed."
The voice said this because in one movement Vimes had swung himself off the table and plunged forward. Vimes woke up and stared at the ceiling. There was a deep rumbling somewhere nearby. Treadmill? Watermill? Then his thoughts knotted themselves most unpleasantly.
"What," he said, "just happened?" "I just thought you might like to try that again, lad," said the invisible friend. "We have little tricks here, as you will learn. Just sit up. I know you've been through a lot, but we don't have time for messing about. This is sooner than I'd like, but I thought I'd better get you out of there before it went really runny, Mr. Vimes."
Vimes froze.
"Who are you?" he said. "It's Lutze, officially, Mr. Vimes, but you can call me Sweeper, since we're friends."
Vimes sat up carefully and looked around. The shadowy walls were covered with writing. It must be writing, he thought, but the Hubland type of writing, which is only one step away from being little pictures. The candle was standing in a saucer. Somewhere behind it, just visible in the shadows, were two cylinders, each as wide as a man and twice as long, set in massive horizontal bearings, one above the other. Both were turning slowly, and both gave the impression of being a lot bigger than their mere dimensions suggested. Their rumble filled the room. There was a strange violet haze around them. Two yellow-robed figures tended the cylinders, but Vimes's eye was drawn to the skinny little bald man sitting on an upturned crate by the candle. He was smoking a foul roll-up of the sort favoured by Nobby, and looked like a foreign monk. In fact, he looked exactly the kind Vimes occasionally saw with begging bowls in the street.
"You're looking fit, Mr. Vimes," said Sweeper.
"You were in the watch-house, right?" said Vimes. "Snouty called you lousy."
Yes, Mr. Vimes, let's say. I've been sweeping up there every night for the past 10 years, all for 2 pence and all the kicks I can't dodge, just waiting for you."
"And you told Rosie Palm where I'd gone, too. You were the monk on the bridge."
"Right again. Couldn't be sure she'd catch up."
"How do you know who I am?"
"Don't get excited, Mr. Vimes," said Sweeper calmly. "I'm here to help you, Your Grace. And I'm your friend because right now I'm the only person in the world who will probably believe anything you tell me about, oh, thunderstorms and falls, that sort of thing. At least," he added, "the only sane person."
He watched Vimes as the man sat quite still for half a minute.
"Good, Mr. Vimes," said Sweeper. "Thinking. I like that in a man."
"This is magic, right?" said Vimes at last.
"Something like that, yes," said Sweeper. "For instance, just now we moved you back in time, just a few seconds, just so you wouldn't do anything you'd regret. Can't say I blame you for wanting to have a go at someone after all you've been through, but we don't want any harm to come to you, do we?"
"Ha! I almost had my hands round your throat."
Sweeper smiled. It was a disarmingly little smile. "Smoke," he said. He fumbled in his robe and produced a ragged hand-rolled cigarette.
"Thanks, but I've got me own,"
Vimes began automatically. His hand stopped halfway to his pocket.
"Ah, yes," said Sweeper. "The silver cigar case. Sybil gave it to you as a wedding present, right? Shame about that."
"I want to go home," said Vimes.
It came out as a whisper. He hadn't been sleeping in the past 12 hours, merely recovering. This time it was Sweeper who sat in silence, apart from the rumble of the cylinders.
"You're a policeman, Mr. Vimes," he said eventually. "Well, I'd like you to believe, for a while, that I'm a sort of policeman too, all right? Me and my colleagues, we see that things happen, or don't happen. Don't ask questions right now, just nod."
Vimes shrugged instead.
"Good. And let's say on our patrol we found you, as it might be, in a metaphorical kind of way, lying in the gutter on a Saturday night singing a rude song about wheelbarrows."
"I don't know a rude song about wheelbarrows." Sweeper sighed.
"Hedgehogs, custard, one-string fiddles, it really doesn't matter. Now, we found you a long way from where you should be, and we'd like to get you home, but it's not as easy as you might think."
"I've gone back in time, haven't I? It was that bloody library. Everyone knows the magic in there makes strange things happen."
"Well, yes. It was mainly that, yes. It's more true to say that you, got caught up in a major event."
"Can anyone get me back? Can you get me back?"
"Well," said Sweeper, looking awkward.
"Wizards can if you can't," said Vimes. "I'll go and see them in the morning."
"Oh, you will you? I'd like to be there when you do. These ain't the wizards under decent old Red Collar, you know, and you're not His Grace Commander Sir Samuel Vimes neither. You're a rough-looking devil who'll be burbling a story about thunderstorms and flying through time to a bunch of rather devious and unpleasant men. You'll be lucky if they only laugh at you. Anyway, even if they wanted to be helpful, they'd hit the same problem."
"And what's that?"
"It can't be done. Not yet."
For the first time in the conversation, Sweeper looked ill at ease.
"The big problem I'm facing, Mr. Vimes, is that I ought to tell you a few things that I'm not, in any circumstances, allowed to tell you. But you're a man who isn't happy until he knows the facts. I respect that. So, if I tell you everything, can you spare me, 20 minutes of your time? It could save your life."
"All right," said Vimes. "But what?"
"You've got a bargain," said Sweeper. "Roll on, boys."
The noise of the big cylinders changed for a moment, and Vimes felt a very slight shock, a suggestion that his whole body had just gone plib.
20 minutes, said Sweeper. "I'll answer every question, and then, Mr. Vimes, we'll have a little chat and send you back from 20 minutes in the future to now, and you'll tell yourself what you and me agree you ought to know, which will be most of it, really. You're a man who can keep secrets, okay?"
Yeah, but..." Vimes began. The tone of the spinning cylinders changed slightly. Sam Vimes saw himself standing in the middle of the room.
"That's me!" "Yeah, right," said Sweeper. "Now, listen to the man."
"Hello, Sam," said the other Vimes, staring not quite at him. "I can't see you, but they say you can see me. Remember the smell of lilac? You thought about those who died. And then you told Willikins to hose down that kid. And, you've got a pain in your chest and you're a bit worried about it, but you haven't told anyone. That's about enough, I think. You know I'm you. Now, there's some things I can't tell you. I can know them because I'm in a..." The speaker stopped and looked away, as if he was taking instruction from someone off stage. "A closed loop. You could say I'm 20 minutes of your life you don't recall. Remember when you had..." A sensation that his whole body had just gone plib. Sweeper stood up.
"I hate to do this," he said, "but we're in the temple and we can pretty much dampen out the paradoxes. On your feet, Mr. Vimes, I'm going to tell you everything."
"You just said you couldn't." Sweeper smiled.
"Need any help with those handcuffs?"
"What? These old capstick mark ones? No, just give me a nail in a couple of minutes. How come I'm in a temple?"
"I brought you here."
"You carried me?"
"No, you walked with me. Blindfolded, of course, and then when you were here, I gave you a little drink."
"I don't remember that."
"Of course not. That was the purpose of the drink. Not very mystical, but it does the job. We don't want you coming back here now, do we? This place is supposed to be a secret."
"You messed up my memory. Now, you see here." Vimes half stood, but Sweeper held up his hands placatingly.
"Don't worry. Don't worry. It just made you forget a few minutes," he said.
How many minutes?
Just a few. And it had herbs in it. Good for you, herbs.
And then we let you sleep.
Don't worry. No one is after us. They'll never know you've gone. See these things here?
Sweeper picked up an openwork box that lay beside his chair. It had a strap like a knapsack, and Vimes could just see a cylinder inside the box.
This is called a procrastinator, said the monk. And it's a tiny version of the ones over there, the ones that look like your granny's mangle. I'm not going to get technical, but when it's spinning, it moves time around you. Did you understand what I just said?
No.
All right. It's a magic box. Happier?
Go on, said Vimes grimly.
You wore one of these, and I led you here from the watch house. Because you were wearing it, you were, shall we say, outside time. And after we've had this little talk, I'll take you back to the watch house, and the old captain won't know any difference. No time is passing in the outside world while we're in the temple. The procrastinators take care of that. Like I said, they move time around. Actually, what's really happening is that they are moving us back in time at the same time that time moves us forward. We've got others around the place. Good for keeping food fresh. What else can I tell you? Oh, yeah. It helps keep track if you just think of things happening one after another, believe me.
This is like a dream, said Vimes.
There was a clink as the handcuffs sprang open.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Said Sweeper calmly.
And can your magic box take me home? Move me in time all the way to where I ought to be?
This? Ha! No, this is strictly for small-scale stuff.
Look, Mr. Sweeper, I've spent the last day fighting a right bastard on a roof and getting beaten up twice and sewn up once and, ha, stitched up too. I've got the impression I should be thanking you for something, but I'm damned if I know what it is. What I want is straight answers, mister. I'm the commander of the watch in this city.
Don't you mean you will be? Said Sweeper.
No. You told me it helps if I think of things happening one after another. Well, yesterday, my yesterday, I was commander of the watch, and I bloody well still am the commander of the watch. I don't care what anyone else thinks. They are not in possession of all the facts.
Hold on to that thought, said Sweeper, standing up.
All right, Commander. You want some facts? Let's take a walk in the garden, shall we?
Can you get me home?
Not yet.
It's my professional opinion that you're here for a reason.
A reason? I fell through the bloody dome!
That helped, yes. Calm down, Mr. Vimes. It's all been a great strain, I can see.
Sweeper led the way out of the hall. There was a big office outside, a hubbub of quiet but purposeful activity. Here and there, among the worn and scratched desks, there were more cylinders like the ones Vimes had seen in the other chamber. Some of them were turning slowly.
"Very busy, our Ankh-Morpork section," said Sweeper. "We had to buy the shops on either side."
He picked up a scroll from a basket by one desk, glanced at the contents, and tossed it back with a sigh.
"And everyone's overworked," he added. "We're here at all hours, and when we say all hours, we know what we're talking about."
"But what is it you do?"
said Vimes.
"We see that things happen."
Don't things happen anyway?
Depends what things you want. We are the monks of history, Mr. Vimes. We see that it happens.
I've never heard of you, and I know this city like the back of my hand.
Right. And how often do you really look at the back of your hand, Mr. Vimes?
We are in Clay Lane, to stop you wondering.
What? Those loony monks in the funny foreign building between the pawnbrokers and the shonky shop? The ones who go dancing round the street banging drums and shouting?
Well done, Mr. Vimes. It's funny how secretly you can move when you're a loony monk dancing through the streets banging a drum.
When I was a kid, most of my clothes came from the shonky shop in Clay Lane, said Vimes. Everyone we knew got their clothes in the shonky shop. Used to be run by a foreign guy with a funny name. Brother Soonshine Sun, said Sweeper. Not a hugely enlightened operative, but a genius when it comes to pricing fourth-hand schmutter.
"Shirts so worn you could see daylight through them, and trousers as shiny as glass," said Vimes.
"And by the end of the week, half the stuff was in the pawn shop."
"That's right," said Sweeper. "You'd pawn your clothes in a pawn shop, but you'd never buy clothes from the pawn shop, 'cause there were standards, right?"
Vimes nodded. When you got right down to the bottom of the ladder, the rungs were very close together, and oh my, weren't the women careful about them. In their own way, they were as haughty as any duchess. You might not have much, but you could have standards. Clothes might be cheap and old, but at least they could be scrubbed. There might be nothing behind the front door worth stealing, but at least the doorstep could be clean enough to eat your dinner off, if you could have afforded dinner. And no one ever bought their clothes from the pawn shop. You'd hit bottom when you did that. No, you bought them from Mr. Sun at the shonky shop, and you never asked where he got them from. I went to me first proper job in a suit from the shonky shop, he said. Seems like centuries ago now.
No, said Sweeper. It was only last week.
Silence ballooned. The only sound was the purr of the cylinders dotted around the room. Then Sweeper added,
It must have occurred to you.
Why? I've spent most of the time here being beaten up or unconscious or trying to get home. You mean I'm out there somewhere?
Oh, yes.
In fact, last night you saved the day for your squad by aiming a crossbow at a dangerous miscreant who was attacking your sergeant.
The silence ballooned larger this time. It seemed to fill the universe. Eventually, Vimes said,
No, that's not right. That never happened. I would have remembered that. And I can remember a lot about my first weeks in the job.
Interesting, isn't it? Said Sweeper. But is it not written? There's a lot goes on we don't get told. Mr. Vimes, you need a short spell in the garden of inner city tranquility.